Y'all ready to have a meeting? Let's have an AA meeting. My name is Melissa, and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday 8 p.m. Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the Napa Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal story describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way that they establish their relationship with God. This gives a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women are grouped tonight and listening later on aablueschipspeakers.org will hear our speaker. And we believe that this is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problem that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight's speaker is Kelly T., and she is from the Gainesville Morning Miracles Women's Group. I'm going to start with cracking one open. It's a LaCroix. If you don't have a replacement drink yet, you should find one. I recommend LaCroix. I love them. I'm going to take a deep breath. Thank you for having me. I'm Kelly. I'm an alcoholic. And I just want to start off with a prayer. I'm going to say the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to Thee. To build with me and to do with me as Thou will. Relieve me of the bondage of self so that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and of Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. Amen. Woo, that felt good. I love that prayer. I am nervous now that I sit up here. I'm never nervous in the car, but now it just happens once I'm in front of everybody. I want to go ahead and just say that when I'm speaking, a lot of times I will stare off into the distance where there's nothing there. I'm not seeing ghosts or anything, but I tend to lose my train of thought a lot of times when I make eye contact with people. Maybe that won't happen tonight, but I have to say that actually makes me feel more comfortable, but like I said, I'm Kelly. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 15th of 2017. I have a sponsor. I sponsor other women. I've been very lucky and blessed to have had the experience of being sponsored by the same woman my entire sobriety, and that has been such a huge blessing. Everyone's experience is different, but God, we've just grown such a deep relationship, and that relationship has been the most spiritual, special relationship that I've had in my life. I also want to thank the two women that are here that came to support me today, my ride or dies in the front, in the second row there. I also wouldn't be sober today if it weren't for the women in my life that have been there through thick and thin for me. I'm here to talk about what happened, what it was like, and what it's like now. I had a really happy childhood. I'm not going to waste too much time on that. My dad worked a lot. That's about all I can say. I could get really nitty gritty and kind of describe some things about, you know, when I was younger, like anything that upset me, but really I had a really good, like, younger years childhood. It was kind of magical. I always felt, though, I was always very, like, imaginative, like, in my head, and I always wanted to kind of, like, just escape. I just wanted to kind of get outside of the box of my neighborhood and just like see the world. And so I kind of always had that, like, I just wanting to get away type of, I guess, feeling. Sometimes I felt like I wanted to jump out of my skin and just like fly. Like, I was very kind of spiritual at a young age in a way. As long as I can remember, I used to write little poems, and I would write poems to God, and I think that came from, this is neither here nor there, but for me, I had like a, what I always thought was like a pre-birth memory, and so I just kind of, from a young age, had this idea of God, of a higher power, and so I'm really grateful for that, because that has always stayed with me. But I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland, Ellicott City, and like I said, everything felt pretty good growing up. We moved to Georgia when I was 11, and that's kind of when I felt all of a sudden like I did not fit in any way, that I wasn't good enough, that, you know, all the kids seemed more mature. They seemed to have it figured out. I was in my awkward phase, and we moved way up in, like, income as far as neighborhood and school, and I just hated it. And I think from that point, I learned that I had to pretend to be somebody else, and I had to pretend, I just had to pretend to be interested in things I wasn't interested in, okay with things that I wasn't okay with, because a lot of what I experienced at the school that I went to was, I'm not going to lie, there was some racism at the school that I went to, and I hated it. I hated it. I came from a diverse community, diverse friends, and I felt like I had to, like, just shut up about it. Like I just had to go to this school. And anyways, I don't know why I'm going off on that so much, but I think that plant implanted some anger in me. But I always had this idea in my mind. I wasn't brought up religiously. I always had this idea in my mind or intuitively that I didn't want to drink. And it was connected to God. It was like, it's not that I thought it was bad. I to this day don't understand why. I guess it was just the spiritual kind of like nudge when everybody else was drinking and doing things. I felt very like repelled about it, like scared of it. But, you know, eventually I gave in to that, and at the age of 14, which that sounds young still, right? But everyone else had been drinking and partying for a while. But I had my first drink. And leading up into that, what had started happening before I had that first drink was that when my awkward stage started ending and my outsides looked, you know, good enough for the popular girls, good enough for the popular guys, and I'm getting suddenly all this attention, it's like I became obsessed with that, you know. It's just like I have to look and act a certain way in order to get love and approval, and these people that didn't used to look at me or talk to me are now giving me attention, you know? And so it just, there was a deep insecurity there, and I just felt like I had to be perfect all the time, around friends, around guys, and one night at my boyfriend's house, I used to feel so uptight around him, like I had to be perfect, and I just decided I'm having a drink tonight. And once I had that drink, it was like my whole body felt warm, I felt happy, like released from all care and worry, and, you know, I loved it. The progression of the disease for me was long and slow, so just long and slow enough to, like, boil the frog, right? Like, it was enough to, over the years, always keep me thinking that I didn't really have a problem. I ended up going to college, and I declared my major to be, well, first I was going to do whatever my dad thought was a good idea, and then I just couldn't do it. I did get diagnosed with ADHD in high school and had gotten on Adderall. The terrible reaction to that, as well as every other medication that they told me to try, made me feel emotional, made me feel suicidal, but it also made me not want to eat, which was great, you know, because that helped me look better for everybody. So I continued that into, like, I think my first year of college, started abusing it, started partying a lot. And to this day, I probably drank more my freshman year than I have at any other point in my life. And yet I don't think I was powerless over it at that point. I was literally making the choice to drink that much. I did end up graduating within like 5 years to get an art degree, which, yeah, because I did art my entire life. So I've always painted. That is what I do today. I own, it's connected to what I do today. Today I'm grateful and blessed to own a paint party business where I teach art, and I love that. And that's only because of my higher power. Like, I would never be able to do any of the things that I do. I'm going to take my shoes off. I'm going to slow down. I would never be able to do any of the things or have any of the things that I have in my life today if it weren't for this foundation of these 12 steps, if it weren't for a loving God that loves me so much and brought me into these rooms at the right time. You know, I want to say that I believe down in my core God's timing. I believe in God's timing, and, like, we can't compare any timing in our own lives or how, like, higher powers work in our own lives to anybody else's, because it's exactly the way it's supposed to be. I want to kind of skim over a lot of, as much as I can, of, I'm 36 years old, y'all, so this could go on for a minute if I give the timeline all the way up till I get sober, but, you know, I made it out with school. Like, I didn't perform or get the grades that I wish I would have gotten, but I'm proud that I graduated. I did good in my final presentation. My major was painting. I'm a painter. I'm a visual artist. And I married those two things together, painting and substances, alcohol, pot mainly. But what happened was that just became my whole personality, right? It was this escapism and getting lost in this other world as an abstract artist, surreal artist, like trying to kind of like reflect what's in my mind, you know? And I had this like tragic idea of like being the tragic artist. I hear that from a lot of people in recovery that are creative. It's just kind of like you're kind of on this like downward spiral, but you don't really care. There's something romantic in the mess of it all. And that was my identity, very much so. And the more that I drank, you know, I'm not going to say there weren't good times. There were good times for sure. I had a lot of fun, but I've heard it say people say there's three stages of drinking, alcoholism, whatever, fun and problems. Fun and problems, and then just problems, right? And then those problems end, I believe, with, like, death, essentially, for me. I know that that's where I was headed, and I know if I pick up again that that's where it will lead me, or even worse, hurting or taking the life of somebody else. Alcoholism took all that beauty and all that light that was in me, and it just slowly started destroying me from the inside out. It made me think that the disease that was taking me over was me, was my identity, and it wasn't. You know, I was just sick. Left untreated, I am sick. I have to work a program. I have to talk to a lot of people. I have to do a lot of things in order to maintain my spiritual health, you know, and my sobriety. And I don't make any apologies for that. You know, I definitely have had people in my life that are like, you're going to another meeting or have fear of judgment about how much it takes for me to really feel good, you know, but everyone's different, you know, everyone's different. Everyone has their own program of recovery. And like, for me, I have to be like all the way in. I love alcoholics so deeply, guys. I love you guys so much because you have been where I've been. You have that same hole inside of you that you were pouring things into. And it's just so painful to, like, give that up. Give up all the trying and the reaching for everything else. But when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 29 years old. At that point, lots of bad things had happened as a result of my drinking. And I was broken, and I'd had lots of bottoms leading up into that point, never had been to a rehab, never had been arrested, never even had my family tell me that I was an alcoholic. They just said, you need to chill out with the drinking, or you're so, you know, you're such a great person when you're not drinking. And I could stand here and give so many examples where everything inside of me wanted to not take that drink. Everything inside of me. I had every reason not to take that drink. That was the plan. And I'm taking the drink. And you guys know that just goes on day after day after day. That can go on for years until you die. That will go on years until I die if I pick up a drink again and I don't make it back into these rooms. You know, I remember, like, the point of me realizing my powerlessness was a few years before I made it to my first meeting, and it was like a really subtle sensation of realizing, like, that this thing kind of had me. But I still didn't put two and two together that I was an alcoholic. So the drinking really just kind of, I always, as an alcoholic, unfortunately or fortunately, I really just care about how I feel now. That's what I care about the most. Like, I want to feel good now. Whatever it is, I want that instant gratification. I think that's in kind of embedded in all of us, right? I just have different tools today for what that looks like to feel good now, and it doesn't involve a drink or a drug. So I came in the rooms when I was 29. I've said this a million times. Let me get to the point. Slow down. I love when people can just slow down, and it's really hard for me. After school, I basically lived with my mom for a little while, my brother for a little while, went to Atlanta for a little while, got evicted from an apartment in Atlanta, came back home, found the same people, you know, found the same playground. I got into playing free roll poker, as lame as that is. I got addicted to free roll poker because always makes me think about the part in the book where they talk about him caroming, if that's the word, around on the golf course, you know, with the tan of the well-to-do, like, because it's acceptable to drink, right? It's acceptable to drink in golf, to be in the service industry and drink. And for me, like, that was just one more stop for me. It was like, oh, I can drink during the day and do this. And I had an art studio in Buford. It was at Tannery Row Artist Colony. And I had had it for years. And throughout the years, I had, you know, participated in art shows and, you know, had some, like, accomplished some cool things. And I would often feel like, whenever anything good happened, I felt like it was a cosign for me to keep drinking. And then whenever anything bad happened, I felt like I was being punished for it. But on the day of my last drunk, I had a resentment. I remember it was the morning time, and I drank a little bit of, just a little bit of liquor. It was probably like 12 or something in the afternoon, because that's what I would do. I'd say I was going to paint, go to the studio, stand in front of my painting, and I couldn't be in there without alcohol. And then I couldn't be in there without alcohol and something else. And I would try to make myself do my work, and I could not. I had to have something. And then once I had something, then I painted for a little while, then I had to go to the bar next door. I absolutely had to. Every day, it didn't matter what I said. So I went over to the, you know, poker place, and I mean, these are people that, like, there's nothing wrong with them, right? But they're, like, retired and stuff. Like, that's why they're playing poker, most of them. Some of them were like me. But, you know, I was, like, one of the younger ones in there. And I had somebody bought me, like, a beer or two. And I really don't know if it's that my tolerance had changed, because that had been happening. But I ended up blacking out at some point after not many drinks. I don't know if somebody put something in my drink or what. Thank God I woke up. I woke up at my mom's house. I didn't know how I got there. I didn't know where my car was. My dog had been with me, and she was not with me anymore. And I lost it. I was like, I want to I was like, God, I just want to die. I was hitting the ground, and my mom came over and drove me back to the studio, and I'm just praying the whole time that she's there because I didn't remember a thing. And she ended up being there, and then on the way out of there with my dog, I'm already thinking, like, on the way there, I had said, I'm going to go to an AA meeting. And then once my dog was there, never mind, like, the lights are on. This is a colony with other professional artists. I had left a huge ladder up, music blaring, my dog's barking in her cage, and, I had just left her like that for, like, God knows how long, probably, like, 20 hours or something like that. But once I got her back in the car, I was already changing my mind about this AA thing. And when I got home, she mentioned something to me, like, of course it was like the worst. I felt terrible, but it's also that whole, well, got away with it again. You know, there's that level on our brain where we're like, got away with it again. Close call, right? And it's not that big of a deal. But she was like, Kelly, why don't you just go? And I was like, all right, like something in me knew, like I should just at least go. And when I walked into the rooms, it's like something just like, everything just came, like, I know they talk about the scales of prejudice, but I just had like these scales fall off me and I just felt completely vulnerable, like all the pain just kind of like oozed out. And I picked up a white chip. And I had no idea what that meant. And what I've come to learn is that alcoholism is not what is so much more complex. It's so simple, and it's so much more complex than anybody thinks, right? And it's the obsession, it's the allergy, it's the spiritual malady. And once I learned, you know, that first meeting, I ended up getting 12 steps by my sponsor, and I barely remember anything about that meeting, but I went out to eat with them, and they were sober, and they had done way worse stuff than me, and I just thank God that before I got out of the car that night that I asked her to be my sponsor, because I would have changed my mind again by the time I got home, and they told me to, you know, to text them when I dumped the alcohol, the weed, all of that, and I actually followed through with it because I felt just an energy of safety, you know, and it's that, I wasn't happy, I wasn't like, oh, people are laughing here, I probably didn't even notice that, but it's that, like, joining your tribe for the first time, and you don't even know that they're your tribe yet, and a feeling of safety, so by the grace of God, from that day forward, I actually met her once a week, and we did step work in the book, and I learned about what alcoholism is, and it was just like so many lines hitting me in the gut and just feeling like, man, I never read anything that hit me in the gut like this, you know, reading from the big book, describing my pain, describing my problems, the way that I think, the way that I interact with the world, you know, that feeling like feeling like things are great, and then eventually it turning into everyone's out to get me, and I just have this deep resentment towards life and towards other people, and nothing's working, you know, and I'm just hitting this wall all the time, and so it wasn't just the way it described the drinking, it was the feelings that really kind of took my attention, and I just feel lucky that something in my brain was like, okay, life's going to be really boring if I do this. It's going to be terrible. But I kept hearing the promises, and like a life without alcohol sounded terrible to me. Like I couldn't live with it, couldn't live without it. But the reason it sounded terrible is because I felt so terrible when I wasn't drinking, you know. It just felt awful when I wasn't drinking. But to learn what the obsession was and to learn that can go away if I work these steps. That can actually just go away if I work these steps, and that I could be happy. And I wanted to believe that, and I have reason to believe that because of everybody in the rooms. they looked happier than normal people in a lot of ways, and like a lot of other people in my life that weren't alcoholics. Yeah, I started working the steps, and that obsession, man. I mean, I was calling alcoholics all the time. Just not, how are you, you know, very not surface level stuff, like calling them up, hey, one conversation, the next time I'm calling them is because I want a drink and I need you to talk me through this because I want a drink. Somebody suggested, I don't think it was my sponsor, because I did believe in a higher power, did believe in God, to get on my knees every morning and night and ask God to keep me sober and thank him at night. And in that experience, like looking back on the first year of sobriety, like I did that for years, getting on my knees, and I still do, not every morning and night, but like this deep, intimate trust formed between me and God. I just began to trust something bigger that just kept carrying me through. And the promises were coming true as I worked the steps. And there's no way to really explain it until you start doing it. And I think that, you know, everyone in here who has worked the steps knows that it's just like, it just kind of makes life feel like hard things still happen, right? But when you hold on and you trust, like, it almost feels like magic unfolding if you can see that, like, oh my God, God put, you know, this person here at this time, and they put this person here at this time, and I literally just said this prayer, and then I turn around, and this happened. And it just, you start forming this, like, active spiritual life that becomes more, way a thousandfold more times interesting and fulfilling than the destruction that you were living before, you know, and that's what started happening for me. And I had promised myself after working the steps, if I wasn't happier, I didn't feel the promises, that I would drink. They say acceptance is the answer to all our problems and that we have to know we can never drink again. But like, I didn't accept that right away. I just accepted that I'm going to work these 12 steps. That's all I was going to promise. I'm like, I'm going to finish this. And I'm so glad that I did that. I'm so glad I wasn't like, well, I'm just going to go to like 90 meetings. Like, no, the solution is the steps. You guys are telling me that's how I get the happiness. So I'm going to do the steps and find out. And I'm so grateful I did. And through that, through the working of the 12 steps, which I still have to work today, all the relationships in my family, like especially with my father, was so incredibly broken. I had not talked to him for 2 years. I was filled with an anger and a pain that I cannot even put into words. And I thought this man owed me such apologies. Like, I cannot even tell you. And I, like, even thinking about him or him getting his name getting brought up brought up so much pain. And that he was the one amends that I was, like, scared to make. I was scared if I made amends to him that I'd be really mad that he wasn't apologizing to me and that I wouldn't be able to emotionally handle that I might drink again. But I think it was, like, a year into sobriety, I finally did make that amends. And I did, like, a Sandy Beach forgiveness meditation before I did that the next day. And when I tell you that, like, I made that amends and every ounce of anger towards him just evaporated. And since that day, like, I've had my dad back and we've had a good relationship. Like, and he hasn't, I mean, he's changed in ways, but he didn't change or apologize or own things that I needed him to own, and it didn't matter because I cleared my side of the street and I got my relationship with my father back. I got my dad back. But I do think that when we live this way of life too, like, the people around us do change. That's not the aim, that's not the motive, but it does happen, and it's incredibly beautiful. I think I got about 10 more minutes, but I just want to share with y'all, like, I'm a little bit scattered right now. I went through something. God's, like, talking about God's timing. Whenever I get asked to tell my story, not every time, but sometimes, it's, like, right off the cuff of something really difficult. This is right off the cuff of, like, a really difficult situation that I went through. I found myself in another country, and to go see my partner, and after not seeing him for a month and a half, and the relationship just kind of like fell apart when I got there, and I couldn't come back, and we were there, and it was just so painful to be in a place where, like, I didn't know the language, I couldn't leave, you know, it was mutual, it was a mutual thing, but it was like, it felt like it was out of our control, it just happened, it was supposed to be like one of the most beautiful trips ever that I was looking forward to, and instead it was just like, it was just heartbreak, just brutal heartbreak that I couldn't escape from, and I didn't think about a drink. I was there for 17 days, and we did not yell, we did not disrespect each other, we did not fight, we were calm, you know, I mean, I was crying, for sure, for me, at least I'll speak for myself, and it was like, I just thought, I can't bear this, I can't bear this, I can't face this, I can't sit in this, I can't wake up and keep feeling this way, but I bought books, found the English bookstore, and I read books, I read this Buddhism book, and just breathed, and I prayed, and God was letting me know that he was with me the whole time, and I made it back, you know, we both made it back in one piece, and, like, that's a miracle, that is a miracle. I did not think about drinking when I was there, because the pain was great enough that I felt like, you know, it wouldn't be crazy if I had thought of that. The day that it happened, I asked my sponsee if she would do step work. So at 1 a.m, my time, I was doing step work with her on Zoom, and we were laughing. And that is the gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is what's available to all of us, is that we help one another and we get helped. And it's just so beautiful. Look at the time. Whew, I don't do this thing perfectly by any means, but I think the most important thing is that we're always being honest with somebody. You know, preferably our sponsor. Now I'm like probably overly honest with all the women in my network, but I have to get out the truth on a regular basis, no matter how messed up or sick or twisted my thoughts might be. I have to have somebody that I can share that with, you know, because we're all beautiful, but we're all also sick, you know. We all have to, like, share what it is that's on our minds, because this thing can happen where there's, like, these shoulds of, like, I'm a year sober, I should feel this way, I should look this way, I should know. The alcoholics that I respect the most are the ones that sit in the chair after a lot of time sober, and they share their pain, and they share how they're getting through it. Pain doesn't go away. It gets compounded. It's just enormous in active addiction. In sobriety, in recovery, I'm like, I have so much peace. I have so much peace. I know I'm talking about, like, some harder, darker stuff, but, like, I trust God. God, like, my higher power always works it out, and it's always better on the other side, and I'm always better on the other side. And the reason I'm better on the other side is to help somebody else. And then it's even, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. One of my favorite things is Sandy Beach. He says, if the program could be summed up in two words, it would just be let go. And I love that so much, right? Like, I don't love letting go, but I love that it is that simple. Like, I have to let go. I have to take my hands off the wheel and trust. And I love, love, love that I have relationships with all of these people that all have a different concept of a higher power, and I see that higher power working in their life. And it doesn't matter what it looks like. I see and feel that higher power in them and through them, you know. So again, don't let the God word deter you, because it doesn't matter. My sponsor does not have the same spiritual beliefs as I do. They're similar, but, like, I saw God shining through her. That's why I chose her. It's never stood in the way. It's only actually expanded, you know, because I was in the debating game for a long time, for years into sobriety. I just had to be like, this is wrong or is this right? And I just couldn't give up the freaking debate, and I get my feathers ruffled and all of this stuff. But my experience is that my God is loving, and my God loves every single person exactly the way they are and doesn't want them to be anything but who they were born to be. And that's just me, you know, and there's no hierarchy. There's none of that. And my higher power is not mad if I read a book, Buddhism book, or I'm like interested in Hinduism, or I'm, you know, doing this or that. And like, that took a while to shed too. It's like, I have to seek in all these different ways. This thing gets deeper, I feel like. I'm not saying I've been sober forever, but it gets deeper as time goes on. And I'm still doing like healing stuff. They say it's like an onion, right? And you might get a little frustrated when you realize, like, you know, the pink cloud wears off and it's like, oh, there's this other layer to work through. But it's really beautiful because, like, I'm given the chance to literally, like, reach my highest potential that my higher power wants me to be, not who anybody else wants me to be, but who my God wants me to be. And that's all that I want. That's like when I hung up my hat with the drinking and signed up for the 12 steps, I'm like, my plans are over with. Like, I literally want to take direction from my employer. And I don't always know what those directions are. Some people, I think, get those directions quicker. They know them, you know, and they're like, oh, I got the next 10 years planned out. That's not really how that's not been my experience. But I have a deep trust, and I've had a beautiful, beautiful life. I hope that if you're here for the first time, or it doesn't matter. I don't care what time, how many days or whatever, but, you know, I think this thing is about inches and seconds, and it's just about, like, Mel Robbins talks about this. She's not AA, but she talks about you have an inclination to do something in, like, 5 seconds. And if you don't get up, like, it might be to go to dance at a wedding, you feel like dancing. And if that 5 second passes, you're not going to do it. Or to ask someone to be your sponsor, to ask somebody out, whatever it is. It's like that courage can fade. I pray that you move in those inches and seconds that feel like they've been instilled in you by that small voice telling you to fight for life and telling you to that you're worth it, because you are. And you don't even know the person that you are going to be. The best I could say is like that child that we all were before everything got to us. Like, that's who we are. That's who each and every person in this room is, and we can get back to it, and we can help other people to get back to it, and we can live a really, really beautiful life. And I wouldn't give up this life for anything. So thank you for my sobriety, and thank you for letting me speak tonight. Thank you. Thank you, Kelly. That was very inspirational. I can relate a lot to that. Thank you.
I used to hate my pain. Avoid the feelings like a winter rain. I'd run away, hiding the hurt with a drink or an angry word, until the day I could not deny the healing calling from deep inside. It was a love that was here to mend my broken heart. Could be my friend. On the other side, I will rise above a mountain, here to climb. As I grow, I stumble and I fall, but I am grateful for it all. On the other side, can't explain. Washing away the fearful wounds, bearing a light for my life to bloom. And on the other side, I will rise above the mountains. I must climb, and as I grow, I stumble and I fall. I am grateful for it all on the other side. On the other side, I live my dreams.